can't stop here. This is bat country.
Here's your half of the sunshine acid.
Listening to Radio Free London, me John the Night Bat, carrying you through an early December Monday morning.
Material advantages, the sedentary life has left us edgy, unfulfilled. Even after 400 generations in villages and cities, we haven't forgotten. The open road still softly calls, like a nearly forgotten song of childhood. Invest far-off places with a certain romance. The appeal, I suspect, has been meticulously crafted by natural selection as an essential element in our survival. Long summers, mild winters, rich harvests, plentiful game. None of them lasts forever. Your own life, or your band's, or even your species might be owed to a restless few drawn by a craving they can hardly articulate or understand, to undiscovered lands and new worlds. Herman Melville in Moby Dick spoke for wanderers in all epochs and meridians. He said, "I am tormented with an everlasting itch for things remote. I love to sail forbidden seas." Maybe it's a little early. Maybe the time is not quite yet. But those other worlds, promising untold opportunities, beckon. Silently, they orbit the sun. Waiting.
What we heard there was the voice of Carl Sagan. I woke up this morning and somebody had posted a video to me. Have you seen this? So I fired it up on the television and that's what I got. You got the audio part of it, stunning as that is all by itself. But it turns out that it's a short film by a Danish artist named Erik Wernquist. The video is amazing. You can find it at www.erikwernquist.com/wanderers. If you just type in Carl Sagan and Wanderers, I think it's gone around the net enough that you should be able to find it. Now, by way of introduction, I call myself John the Night Bat on the radio because I don't have the eyesight to be a night hawk or owl. That was a nickname given to me by my friend, jazz flautist and alumni of this radio station and university, Jeremy Price, for just the exact reason that I told you. On the internet, I'm known as Tinker or just a Tinker, and I've had that nickname for a lot longer, but I guess my first official use of it was around 25 years ago when a mentor of mine up at the university here as well, Kirk Reiser, gave me my first email address, tinker@braille.uwo.ca. The show, Radio Free London. There is no freer place in broadcasting than to be the late night host of a campus radio station. And the introduction music that you heard earlier, Jorma Kokeman played with a lot of bands as well as solo work in San Francisco. You may have heard of them, The Grateful Dead, Jefferson Starship, and Hot Tuna. The song, Embryotic Journey. And I always, aside from liking the music, I always liked the title because the embryotic journey is the one thing that we have all in common. That 9-month journey to birth is our common link. You know, if we thought back to that common link, maybe we'd see a little bit less difference in our fellow human being. Now, this is usually a music show, but tonight we're going to mix it up a little bit. You're going to hear some voice and audio of historical portent. Theme tonight is going to be about spaceflight. And although there will be a lot of music, we'll hear some historical moments in spaceflight history as well. And I'm going to start the show by actually including myself in the content instead of at this end of the microphone. What I have for you is a poem about asteroid mining, written like as if it had dropped through a wormhole from a century from now. But really, I wrote it about 20 years ago, and the performance that you hear is from an open stage that I just so happened to be recording. And this poem, done in the manner of cowboy and trucker poetry, in the voice of Talk Like a Pirate Fridays.
The Belt Miner's Tale. Oh, a lowly belter I be, living amongst the roids and rocks, fitting the confines of me ship when I ain't pissed up in the docks. Silver Belly's me good ship's name, that lovely dancer of the ways. Her fusion drive be neat and clean, but her hull, it's seen better days. She wears the marks of refit proud with the pox of impacts minor, looking like the stuff we hunts down. She's a beauty, ain't none finer. See, what we does is looks for ore between the war god and the king. Ain't nothing but old bits and pieces do make their orbits in that ring. We sets our course on hunch and whim. Us miners, we got this here knack. Navin' by the seats of our suits, you lose it, you ain't coming back. So when we closes on our prey, the spectrograph tells us the tale. What are we gots? A mutter load, or it's time to hit that old trail. If we turns up a high mass node, I gets me ass into gear. Out to lock, the sets the charges. Just me and luck and fate and fear. Placement and time enough to blast, that'd be the toughest job indeed. But then we can send her clear to hell, or to Cirrus, or Ganymede. I goes through all the final checks and gets me and old Silver clear. Then gives that old ass D-Roid a megaton kick in the rear. And when that rock be tracked and logged, I flares for the nearest port. There I changes me creds for booze, a mission I never abort. And why I ties one on in the tabs should be clear as your visor's plate. You can't be hammered on your run, or you push it with luck and fate. Death, it be always close at hand. That one mistake, and you're gone. Always flying Oakham's laser, it be fear that keep the edge on. Belt mine and life be cut three ways, the lonely cruising tween the ends. First to work to get your blisters, then laughing it up with your friends. Wondering why we trips alone with our ships as mate and mutter. It'd be harder to kill ourselves than it be to off each other.
There you have it, The Belt Miner's Tale, by none other than your humble host here at Radio Free London. Now next up, you're going to hear the voice of someone that I revered as much as the astronauts that I worshipped as a kid, Walter Cronkite and the Apollo 11 landing.
1202. 1202. Good radar data. Altitude now 33,500 feet.
Hal wasn't too far off.
I suspect that Hal may be just about right by the time Doug Ward relays that to us, so he's probably a few seconds behind.
Roger, we got you. We're going at alarm. Roger, 230. 6 plus 2, 5, throttle down. 6 plus 2, 5, throttle down. Roger, copy. 6 plus 2 5.
We're still go. Altitude 27,000 feet.
Same alarm, and it appears to come up when we have a 1668 up. Roger, copy.
What's this alarm, Wally?
It's a go case. Function that's coming up on the computer.
Delta 8 looks good now. Roger, Delta 8 is looking good to us.
The verb noun combination, no problem, as I see.
Delta on time.
They say it's better than the simulator. That's consoling.
I think we're real close.
Crowds around this country and all over the world are watching this, listening to these communications.
Altitude now 21,000 feet, still looking very good.
Here you are. This is the International Arrivals Building, Kennedy Airport, with a big display board there.
Velocity
down now to 1,200 feet per second.
You're looking great,
Disneyland,
Doug.
California.
Okay, I'm still on flu, so we may tend to lose if we gradually pitch over. Let me try auto again now, see what happens. Roger.
You started about the high gain in 10.
Okay, it looks like it's holding. Roger, we got good data.
Makes the job easier.
They're down, there's just 14 miles to go and 4.5 minutes.
7 minutes, 30 seconds into the burn.
4.5 minutes left in this era.
Altitude 16,300 feet.
Oh, boy.
This great, the way the communications is working.
Diesel Houston, descent to fuel to monitor, over.
42. Altitude 13,005. Velocity 91 feet per second.
Made it switch over time, please. Just Roger, stand by. You're looking great at 8 minutes.
Correction on that velocity, now reading 760 feet per second.
It's the P-64.
760 feet per second on the way down. That's pretty slow for space flying.
It is. It's the slowest man has ever flown in space.
It sure is.
Final says we're go. Altitude 9,200 feet.
830, you're looking great.
They're just about
descent rate 129
approaching
feet
high gate.
We copy.
That's 7,600 foot level. 1.4 miles high when they get down to a speed of 98 miles an hour, and they're just a little under 5 miles from the landing site. At that point, they can pitch forward and get a really good view of the landing site.
You're looking great. Coming up 9 minutes.
At that high
gate. We're now in the approach phase. Everything looking good.
Is there inside the high gate?
5,200 feet.
5,200 feet. Less than a mile from the moon, sir.
Manual attitude control is good. Roger, copy.
Altitude 4,200.
Think you're a go for landing, over.
Oh, great go.
Roger, understand. Go for landing. 3,000 feet.
3,000 feet. Ooh. 12 alarm, meaning they're on the spot. Huh?
Roger, 1201 alarm. We're go. Same time. We're go. 2,000 feet. Into the egg. 47 degrees. Roger. 37 degrees.
Just these communications, too. That was read out perfect.
Eagle looking great. Your go.
Altitude 1600.
Oh, this is...
They've got a good look at their site now. This is the critical time. They're going to hover. They're going to make a decision. Apparently, they're...
Go 1202. We copy it. 35 degrees. 35 degrees. 750. Coming down to 23. 700 feet, 21 down, 33 degrees.
Oh, the data is coming in beautiful.
100 feet, down to 19. 540 feet, down to 30, down to 15. And 400 feet, down to 9. Stay forward. 1050 feet, down to 4.
Boy.
Thank you. You're looking good here.
Boy.
Okay, we're going to be busy for a minute. After I'm on, take care of it. I'll get this up to bed.
Wally, say something. I'm speechless.
I'm just trying to hold on to my breath. That is really something.
Hey, smooth touchdown.
Kind of nice to be aboard on this one, isn't it?
You know, we've been wondering what this guy Armstrong and Alden would say if he stepped foot on the moon, which comes a little bit later now. And just to hear him do it, we're left here absolutely with dry mouths and speechless.
Hey, it looks like we're mending the exercise enough. Roger, Eagle, and you are safe for T1. Over. Eagle, you are safe for T1. Roger. And we're Sam, safe for T1. Roger, and we see you bending the ox.
It's a great simulation of what you can see there, if you could see us.
That little fly speck is supposed to be a lens.
Gee, they must be in a perfect position, upright. We've heard no complaints about their position.
Just a
land of that.
Just a little dust, even that concern was erased.
Wow. And there they sit on the moon. Just exactly nominal, wasn't it? Exactly as a flight plan all the way down. Man planning this thing on the surface of the earth. All right, Charlie. We've done it.
That's 22.
Copy, 9:43. Roger, we have it.
The voice of Walter Cronkite and Wally Schirra on the ground, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin in the Eagle Lunar Module, the sounds of the moon landing that happened in July of 1969, the very first human landing on another celestial body. Next up, it's going to be a little bit of both spoken word and music. The space shuttle retired a few years back, and even back during the Apollo program, it was a tradition to wake up the astronauts with music picked by their family or closest friends. So what I'm going to play for you tonight is the wake-up calls of the shuttle flight STS-115. Its mission number was 12A for the 12th assembly flight of the International Space Station. The crew, Brent Jett as commander, mission specialist Daniel Burbank, mission specialist Heidi Marie Stephanopoulos Piper, Steve McLean, the Canadian on this particular flight. Chris Ferguson was the pilot. Mission specialist Joseph Tanner filling out the crew there. They flew for about 2 weeks, and that gave them a chance to each get a wake-up song twice. Here you have it, and because this crew has such a good taste in music, I call this 12A Rocks.
Style someday, old dream maker, you heart breaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way to drift. Off to see the world, there's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend. Very friend, moon river and me. Mm-hmm.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground one. Good morning. Brand, this wake-up music, Moon River by Audrey Hepburn, was selected for you by your wife, Janet.
Morning, Houston. Thanks for the music. It really is a beautiful day up here. We're awake and getting ready to get to work with the inspection.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground one. Good morning. We have the cryo config and some words on the KFX machine whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Houston from Atlantis. That was some great music for a good day in space, and really appreciate you sending that up. And give us just a moment. We'll give you a call for those in just a second here, Hans.
Okay. Atlantis, Houston on the big loop. Good morning. Whenever you are ready, we have the cryo config for you on air to ground two.
Houston station on the big loop from the airlock. Thank you for that wonderful wake-up music. I think it's the words are very appropriate. I'll just give you a brief translation. It was written by Taras Shevchenko, a Ukrainian poet, and he writes to remind everyone to learn and to read as much as you can and to teach others and learn from others. And I think being up here on the ISS, that's exactly what we're doing. And so it's nice to hear those words again and see how appropriate they are today. Thank you.
Atlantis, Houston, on the Big Loop. Good morning.
Okay, we copy that. And listen, I know you didn't hear me the first time, but I just want to thank my family for that music. We did get up very early this morning, and we'll be taking care of business, getting the solar arrays prepared for the ability to rotate so that we can double the power on station and make it a little bit safer with the redundant channel for the increment crew. So Dan and I are looking forward to doing that, and it should be a great day while we take care of it.
Wipeout!
We like it also. Very nice.
Down the corridor, I thought I heard them say,
and she said, "We are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers, they're gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast."
We are sure this will be a great day, Joe. And whenever you are ready on Air to Ground 2, we have some KFX and duck machine information.
And there you have it. Flight days 2 through 7 of the Space Shuttle Flight STS-115, or the 12th assembly flight to the International Space Station. Moon River, performed by Audrey Hepburn, played for Commander Brett Jett. After that, we heard Da Full Rigged Ship, Da New Rigged Ship. That's a two-part Scottish sea shanty performed for mission specialist Dan Burbank by his children. After that, My Friendly Epistle, a Ukrainian song by Taras Shevchenko, played for mission specialist Heidi Marie Stepanopoulos Piper. Then Taking Care of Business for Canadian Steve McLean by Bachman Turner Overdrive. Then this one for pilot Chris Ferguson. I was kind of wondered about about their choice of songs. Wipeout, performed by the Safaris. And then we heard Hotel California by the Eagles for mission specialist Joseph Tanner. So now for part two and the second part of the flight of STS-115, wake-up calls for the astronauts.
I never got a grip on penmanship. Could never make the small L's flow. Seldom found the trick to arithmetic. leave us to be whole. But ask for some palm trees or tales from the South Seas, and I just might turn your head. I never had the clout to knock one out, but hitting was the name of my game. Standing on third as the coaches confer, close to my first claim to fame. Just give me the steel sign and I'll make home late in mine, and I just might turn somehow. Sometimes I may get a little drastic. Sometimes I just let my feelings show. Sometimes I may be a bit sarcastic. Most times that's the way the story goes. This Joe down in Mexico, he went there to work on his tan. For years he's been plugged into blenders and songs, they call him the 12-volt man. He don't need no charge card, just give him a diehard, and he make sparks fly around your head. Or just ask for some palm trees and tales from the South Seas, and I'll make sparks fly around your head.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground 2. Good morning.
Houston, Atlantis, good morning, Hans. Thanks very much for that great wake-up music. I think that was sent to me by my wife, Roz, and my kids, Emily and Daniel, who are up in Cape Cod right now. And it's a great way to start a day up here in space, and I really appreciate that. Thanks, Houston.
Thank you, Dan, and we hope you enjoy the couple of free hours you will have, and enjoy your day.
Big and you're the dancing girl.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground 2. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Houston. That's great music for a for what will be a bittersweet day for us today, undocking from the station and what hopefully will be some pretty good pictures during a fly around. Thanks very much to Sandy, Laura, Eric, and Ian.
Thank you, Chris. And we have nothing for you right now except that there are two shortcuts on the KFX for the execute package. Nothing else.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road, hanging by a song. But the string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast, and it don't last for long. But the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire. Softer than a lullaby, Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado,
Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
He climbed cathedral mountains, he saw silver clouds below, he saw everything as far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once, and he tried to touch the sun, and he lost a friend but kept a memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side has turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. And the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Talk to God and listen to the casual reply. Rocky Mountain High. Of a simple thing cannot comprehend. While they try to tear the mountains down, they bring in a couple more. More people, more scars upon the land. In the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Rocky Mountain High.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground one. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Houston. We just flew over Colorado yesterday. It was beautiful. Looks like a great place to live. And thank you, Martha. Next 2 years, going to be pretty exciting.
Cherchez l'étoile, vous qui vivez un rêve, vous héros de l'espace, au cœur plus grand que la terre, vous donnez-moi ma chance.
Good morning.
Good morning, Hans. Et bonjour. Merci de cette chanson de ma famille, Nadine, Jean-Philippe, Catherine et Michel. On est au sud de l'océan Pacifique maintenant. C'est notre grande journée dans l'espace. Et dites à eux qu'on revient bientôt.
We copy, Steve. And we have only one item for you. The pictures are all downlinked, and you can remove the card from the deck machine.
Okay, we copy.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground one. Good morning.
Good morning, Houston. And it really is a beautiful day. I think any day in space is a beautiful day. And hopefully tomorrow will be a beautiful day in Florida and we'll be back home. And I'd like to say thanks to my family for that wonderful thought.
WWOZ is on the stereo. String of flowers halo round your head. Candlelight the ceiling fan. Curtain blows away and back again. Back again.
Atlantis, Houston, air to ground one. Good morning.
Morning, Houston. Thanks for the wake-up music. What's on the timeline for today?
Well, Brian, the timeline is for entry, of course. And right now you're in the pre-sleep. We had a little bit ready calm. That's why we came 10 minutes late. And the only thing we have early this morning is for you the cryo config at your convenience.
Okay, Hans, thanks. Once we get up towards the flight deck, we'll give you a
30 seconds to landing.
Sure.
370 miles an hour. Altitude 225 feet. Gear down low. Touchdown. Drag chute deploy. Nose gear touchdown.
Landing deltas. We'll meet you on page 5-3 for post-landing.
Thanks, Houston. Nice to be back, and it's a great team effort, so I think assembly's off to a good start.
You're listening to Radio Free London, coming out of Western University in London, Ontario, Canada, North America, Earth, the solar system, the Milky Way galaxy, the local group. Need I go on? This was the second part of the wake-up music for Space Shuttle STS-115. This was the second Space Shuttle flight, what they called return to flight, after the Space Shuttle Columbia broke up, re-entering the atmosphere over Central Texas. The first flight was Discovery after Columbia, commanded by Elaine Collins, and they tried out new techniques to scrutinize the tiles and the wing leading edges of the Space Shuttle so that they could return to flight with some modicum of safety. And after that, this flight, Atlantis, STS-115, they got back to work and pretty much brought the last bits and pieces to the outside of the space station. For flight day 8, we had 12-volt man performed by Jimmy Buffett. That was for mission specialist Dan Burbank. After that, we heard Kenny Loggins with Danger Zone for pilot Chris Ferguson. For mission specialist Joseph Tanner, we heard John Denver and Rocky Mountain High. After that, we heard Don't Leave Without Me by Celine Dion. And that was for our Canadian astronaut Steve McLean. After that, U2 with Beautiful Day played for mission specialist and Navy diver, I might add, Heidi Marie Stephanopoulos Piper. And then last but not least, played for Commander Brent Jett on landing day, day 13. We heard WWOZ, and that's by Better Than Ezra. Of course, we had the landing at the end. And the voice you heard in between all of that wake-up music was Hans Schlegel of the European Space Agency. For this flight, he was Capcom. The patch worn on the clothing of the astronauts was actually designed by some students at York University. And that was Steve McLean's university, too. So there you have it. 12A rocks. Some great music, wake-up calls for the astronauts. Now, next up, I have a really rare recording. It was a documentary done by John Lomberg. He went down to JPL to cover the landing of Viking 1 on the surface of Mars. And folks at JPL decided to make it a big event, seeing as how it was the very first time that we would land another vehicle on another planet. We'd landed unmanned vehicles on the moon, and we'd landed people, but we'd never succeeded in landing something on another planet. And Viking 1 was the first time that was going to happen, happening 7 years to the day of the landing of the Eagle Lunar Module. JPL invited folks from Star Trek and many, many science fiction authors, as well as Carl Sagan. This is the second time that he's going to be involved in my show tonight, and there's a third one coming up near the end. So here we have the Viking 1 landing on Mars from Jet Propulsion Laboratories in Pasadena, California, July 20th, 1976.
July 20th, 7 years to the day after the first people walked on the moon. What you'll hear now is the landing as it actually happened. The commentators are George Sands and Al Hibbs, speaking on Viking Control's closed circuit network.
The Viking 1 lander continues its approach toward the Martian surface. It's roughly 4,000 miles above the surface now.
The object in space, the Viking lander, I believe, has at this point felt the upper atmosphere, even though we won't know about that for 19 minutes. So it is inexorably going to the surface.
The GCSC indicates that we have powered on the stagnation pressure, aeroshell pressure.
Nominal touchdown is at 5:12 Pacific Daylight Time. Now, that's an Earth receive time. That means that that's when we should get the signal for touchdown.
So it actually occurred how much before
it
that?
It actually occurred roughly 19 minutes earlier, because that's how long it takes the signals to get from Mars to here. The intricate way in which the lander sequence goes through the descent time period and the way it steers itself is all done by the lander computer. And that's sort of an artificial intelligence, you might say, that's been designed by us, that has stored in it all the programming it needs to handle all these various conditions that it might run into and land safely on Mars.
Within 10 seconds, landing will have occurred.
The Viking should be on the surface of Mars by now, one way or another. But we're now going to spend the next 19 minutes finding out what that way is.
Right.
ACS confirms maneuver in progress.
Gene Roddenberry and Nichelle Nichols of Star Trek.
I guess we have people in science fiction have a sort of partnership with scientists. They provide the hardware, the science, the dreams, and we provide the stories, hopefully, that it keeps the audience interested in identifying with all of this.
Space program is the doorway to the existence, of future existence of a Star Trek universe. And this is the single most important thing in our century of all space exploration since landing on the moon, I would say, the first man on the moon. And that is a possibility that there really is life out there, as we believe there is.
When Viking lands, what do you hope to see?
Oh, a little green man walking up saying, "Hi, we've been waiting for you."
The lander should be on the surface at this time. The GCSE indicates that we have initiated the pre-entry pitch over where we'll hold the minus 20 degree angle of attack.
We now have the next graph that's just been put up by the flight path analysis group. There are no points of data on it yet, but they have drawn in what they predict for the altitude as a function of time. So we'll be coming down the altitude in thousands of feet, starting at 800,000 feet, which is sort of arbitrarily defined as a point of entry, and then on down. And they'll be picking up data from radars to put actual data points on that plot, and we can compare them ourselves and see how they compare with anomaly.
And the things to look for are 0.05G, 1.1 kilometers per second, chute deployment at 19,400 feet, and engine ignition at 4,000 feet.
This whole process that we're going through, first of all, the aeroshell phase, and then the parachute phase, and then the terminal descent phase, are all designed to slow the lander down. And you get down to a speed relative to the surface of 8 feet per second, and that's the constant velocity with which you land. But when you hit the atmosphere, way back up at entry, you're going at 15,000 feet per second. By the time the parachute comes out, you've slowed down to 1,000 feet per second, and by the time you turn on the terminal descent engines, you're going to 200 feet per second. But you're going in roughly, let's see, say 9 minutes from 15,000 feet per second to 8 feet per second.
800,000 feet. 800,000 feet. Let's see. Place we define as entry.
RE number 2, locked in track. ACS confirms coordinate transformation change.
The radars are on. That means we will now be getting data as to where we are.
In about 1 minute, we should sense 05G.
Up to 7.9.
There's the first data point right on the nominal curve. Now,
feet per second. 595,000 feet. 560,000 feet.
Data 2, phase 1. Data 2.
500,000 feet, 15,350 feet per second.
I've simply wanted to know about Mars all my life. I started being curious about Mars when I started reading Edgar Rice Burroughs back, in 1918, I think.
Robert Heinlein, author of Stranger in a Strange Land.
At that time, everyone thought that Professor Lowell's notions about canals were the last word with respect to Mars. Now, we've learned more, but we still have so much more to learn that before this morning is over, we will know far more than we know now. So I don't have anything to say as to what Mars is like yet. We'll know more shortly. All of you will know more than I know right now when you hear this.
314,000 feet, 15,480 feet per second.
Third point falls on the nominal curve.
We sense 0.05 Gs.
Telecom lead, how's the SNR at a high rate?
Thank you, Scott.
SNR is holding very well on the 3D8.
In the atmosphere now.
Quality has dropped. 1.1 kilometers per second has been sensed.
1.1 kilometers per second sensed.
Negative 200,000 feet.
200,000 feet. That means that we can now put out some of the instrument.
Feet.
Some of the instrument.
1.2 Gs.
That.
Reluctant tracking RE2.
Cannot stand the temperature of entry.
2.7 Gs.
Pressure and temperature sensors.
8.4 Gs. 88,000 feet. Excellent convergence. 6,000 feet per second.
Oh, we're coming down. We're coming down.
Mr. Heinlein, what do you think your reaction will be when Viking lands and the first pictures come in?
I will be so excited, I will hardly be able to contain myself. I will feel very much the way I did when we heard the words, Eagle has landed, just 7 years ago exactly today.
In about one more minute, the chute should come out.
85,700 feet, 3,223 feet per second. 0.8 Gs. Convergence good. 0.5 Gs. 74,000 feet, 2,327 feet per second.
The chute has been deployed.
0.4 Gs. 6,200 feet, 182 feet per second.
Almost engine
burn. 4,800 feet, 177 feet per second.
Confirm roll number.
Parachute separation. 4,200 feet. The loops are high mode.
Minus 105.
0.3 Gs. 2,600 feet, 188 feet per second.
On terminal descent engine.
Pitch up confirmed, 1,200 feet, 140 feet per second.
So the engine 0.6
Gs. 20 feet per 366 feet, 73 feet per second. ACS is close to vertical.
So we're coming down, straight down.
Nav is green for touchdown. ACS is green, 1.5 degrees per second max, 0.2 Gs.
8 feet per second.
Touchdown, we have touchdown. Exit zone. Camera one zone. We're looking good.
Planner lead. Power is decreased.
Copy power. We're out of sync.
We have several indications of touchdown.
So we have
completed.
We're on the surface. Looking good. Yes, we have a touchdown time of 12 hours, 12 minutes, 07.1 seconds.
We should go to Mars just as we do all the most exciting, most wonderful things in life so that we can survive. Everything is survival. Everything
Ray Bradbury, author of The Martian Chronicles.
Which enables us to exist in this universe of ours. I sometimes am astounded when I think of the average person who doesn't realize that we live in this universe, that we live in a star system, that we're incredible, that we're miraculous, that we're impossible. We must move out to the stars. We are responsible to the gift of life in the universe, in this part of the universe. We're the only things alive right around here, as far as we know. So that's a big responsibility. And space travel is a responsible way of reacting to the gift of life that we have. And so we're talking theology here suddenly, aren't we? And not science, not politics, and anything of that sort. It's being responsible to our position in the Milky Way, huh?
On the 20th day of August in 1975 came the big countdown, and the crew on the ground said the bird is now alive. So they sent me off to old Barsoom, just a looking at a planet with some elbow room. But there's dust and snow, it's a crazy kind of place for me to love it so. More dismal and deserted than the plain of Jars, but I love it and I call it Mars. Well, I did my number when they hollered go, but I could have been in a fix. Now I got to the bottom of the gravity well, and it went okay, but I was scared as hell. How'd you like to see the Chrissy Plains with 800 Earthlings picking your brains? But if there's a message in a mission to Mars, it's gotta be tomorrow the stars.
Viking Science Mission Planning Director, Gentry Lee.
As we started watching the points can't come in, and they started being marked, they were negligibly different from the center of the line, one right after another, and you could feel the excitement, the tempo building as each dot went blunk, 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 right on the middle. The landing, and then on top of that, the communications were expected to be blacked out for up to 45 or 50 seconds, but that never happened. The relay system performed way above anything anybody had ever expected, so we got all the data down in real time that we had anticipated. Finally, when it came to landing, the landing ended up only 15 seconds away from plan. Now, to sort of get an idea of how super nominal that is, you have to realize that we separated when we were way up, 20,000 miles or so away from, well, 15,000 miles away from the spot where we were going to land. And we then flew an entire path whose landing on the surface of Mars differed during that 3.5 hours by only 15 seconds. And that gives you some idea for how good it was.
Dave Pieri of the team that operates Viking's cameras.
I was upstairs in 264, and I sat in front of the little screen, a little monitor, where everybody else was in the big room, okay? And I really didn't want to go in there. I just watched on a little screen all by myself, and I just watched them plot it as it came down, and it really got scary when it dropped, 30,000 feet in about, 25 seconds or something like that. And then finally, it settled down, and the sensors hit, and you could see on the readouts that it had landed, and everybody, cheered and everything. And then it was quiet, and I just watched where it said camera two, off, camera two off, camera two off, camera two off, and all of a sudden, bang, camera two came on, and I practically fell out of my chair. I just practically fainted. It was great.
And there's the first piece of information coming in.
Half an hour after landing, Viking 1 transmits the first pictures back from the surface of Mars. Tim Much, leader of the lander imaging team, and Al Hibbs, speaking on the closed circuit TV.
Tantalizingly thin sliver of picture.
Yep, that's it.
He rocks.
Oh,
that's beautiful. May not look like much, but it's lovely.
Oh. Yeah, I'm supposed to say something at this point. I just don't feel like talking.
Well, there are rocks.
There are rocks, yes. There's rocks, and there's sediment, but it's just incredible to see that the Mars, is really there.
The first panorama picture.
The spacecraft is just sitting up there. Must be in beautiful shape. Sun's just about where we anticipated, looking out across the surface, which certainly is reminiscent of many desert surfaces that I've walked across here in the Southwest. Oh, sensational. A very bright sky, but you can see the horizon. Oh, isn't that lovely? Horizon sloping down. Looks like it's sloping down to the right.
Looks a little bit that way, that's right.
Oh, isn't that? That's fantastic. That's fantastic. The horizon looks a little complicated, as if there's a good deal of relief out there. Very modest relief, but it's far from a nominal, uninteresting flat horizon.
It was truly a transcendental experience, and I mean that in the sense that it's used by all the people who use the phrase in terms of meditation and other such things. We have spent 7 to 8 years working on this program, and of course we'd spent a lot of time designing the pictures. And I could have, from memory, in my dreams, explained to you exactly where those pictures were going to be and exactly what portions of the lander you would be able to see and would not be able to see. But never, ever in my, and I do have a fancy imagination, had I ever put together exactly what was going to be in those pictures in such a way as what we actually saw. Now, if I can sort of explain the drama of what happened, we were getting, this is a facsimile camera, so it gets line for line. And the pictures are reconstructed in real time, and when they get like a dozen lines or so, they show you a small vertical slit of the picture. And in that first vertical slit, if you remember, there were those rocks in that incredible ground, and the clarity was unbelievable. And it was as if everyone in the room, I was sitting in with a large number of the imaging people, had been at that time, had been just lifted up. Nobody could say a thing. What Tim Mutch said then on the real-time camera was, oh my gosh, was typical. It was absolutely fantastic. I personally felt as if someone had reached inside me and lifted all of my body up through my head, and I was sitting somewhere floating right above the top of my head.
Dr. Seymour Hess, leader of the meteorology investigation team.
The first thing to say is that all indications so far are that we have a healthy instrument doing precisely what it was designed to do, which is a great relief to me. The second is to tell you that it's my privilege now to give you the first weather report from Mars in the history of mankind. The weather at Chrysi on Sols 0 and 1. Light winds from the east in the late afternoon, changing to light winds from the southwest after midnight. Maximum wind was 15 miles per hour. Temperature ranged from minus 122 degrees Fahrenheit just after dawn to minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit, but we believe that was not the maximum. Pressure steady at 7.70 millibars. And now I'll show you a few of the details. Let me talk about wind direction first. On Sol 0, in our first module of data, and for two modules thereafter, we had winds from the east. That changed rapidly thereafter to winds from the southwest and fluctuated around for the rest of the time in this data. That's exactly what winds are supposed to do in any sensible atmosphere.
Dr. Michael McElroy on the Martian atmosphere.
If we go back before the landing of Viking 1, what do we know about Mars's atmosphere? We knew that the atmosphere had CO2. We had this Soviet result suggesting that it had a lot of argon, indirect though it might have been. We knew that there was a little water in the atmosphere. We knew that there was carbon monoxide, a little bit. We knew that there was some molecular oxygen. I think our view of the atmosphere is totally different now. We know exactly how much of these compounds are present. We know that the atmosphere has 1.5% or so argon. We know that it has 2.5% molecular nitrogen. And even more important than that, we have found a way to look at the past history of the planet Mars from the point of view of its atmosphere. We've never had a way to date the atmosphere of the Earth. Now, Mars has been very cooperative. Gases escape from Mars, oxygen escapes, nitrogen escapes. Now, with these measurements, and knowing that the light isotopes tend to escape more readily than the heavy, we have a way to look back in the past history of Mars and to see that it had an atmosphere which was, from the point of view of nitrogen at least, quite massive in the early stages.
Astronomer Carl Sagan on the geology of Mars.
We see on Mars an enormous exuberance of geological processes. Certainly from orbit, we see evidence of impact processes, volcanic processes, aeolian processes, mass wasting processes, fluvial processes, and perhaps even glacial processes. And these are mixed together in a manner which is quite unusual for the somewhat more restrained planet Earth.
Mars has not always been as it is now. An image of a more temperate, more hospitable Mars has begun to emerge, expressed in the words of scientists and in a song by Jonathan Eberhardt, one of the newsmen covering Viking.
10,000 times 100,000 dusty years ago, where now extends the plain of gold, did once my river flow. It stroked the stones and spoke in tongues and splashed against my face. till ages roll. The sun shone cold on this unholy plane.
Mars is, in a deep sense, today in an ice age, and was once under conditions which were much warmer, perhaps much higher pressure, certainly, and had abundant flowing liquid water.
So many stars bedeck my skies when once there were but few. But oh, to know again the clouds that hid them from my view. My ochred cliffs and rusted sands stand regal and serene. But oh, my wan and wasted world, I miss your blue and green.
From the point of view of life now, one can say that the elements that are necessary to make life, to make living reproductive systems, are present in the atmosphere. The elements of the chemistry set are there. We have water, we have carbon, we have nitrogen. And the only real remaining question is whether the great chemist was there to assemble the elements of the chemistry set and put them together the right way.
But it's just the way to wait. Not a death watch or a friend. Tomorrow has a starting, as does yesterday an end. For the water of my river and the air that was my wind, though bound in rocks and wintry wastes, I pray may flow again. Sands stand regal and serene. But oh, my wan and wasted world, I miss your blue.